So, welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Amy Downs, who is Lifesize's Chief Customer Success and Happiness Officer. That's some title, Amy. But first of all, how do you do? How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Adrian, for having me on today. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Now, that's some title you've got there, Amy. I mean, maybe for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a little bit about you, about the work that you do, and also a little bit about Lifesize?
Absolutely. So Chief Customer Success and Happiness Officer, a little self-explanatory. My job is to make sure our customers are happy. And Lifesize, we are basically a video conferencing collaboration platform. So not only video, but we also offer audio conferencing, web conferencing. We have a little bit of an Internet of Things going on. So we offer conference room cameras that connect into our cloud-based service. And it's really a collaboration platform that any business worldwide can use. So our biggest goal is to connect people to make their workplace great. That's our vision of the company, and customer obsession is our number one core value. So my job is really to help each and every Lifesizer understand what it's like to live customer obsession and what that means to live that day in and day out.
Perfect. Now, the reason that we got connected was I heard about this epic journey that Lifesize and you have been on in the last kind of 2.5 years. But before we get stuck into the nitty gritty of it, I wonder if you could give us a little bit of a backstory as to what the situation was and how it came about.
Sure. So I joined Lifesize back in June of 2014. At that point, we were in a complete transformation mode, moving the company from an on-premise software provider of really video conferencing only solution into a SaaS-based model. Mm-hmm. We are manufacturing devices. So I mentioned a little bit of this Internet of Things, kind of like a Fitbit or a Nest. We not only do we provide a service to our customers, but we manufacture the hardware. And so we were a company that was manufacturing hardware in a two-tier distribution model. So we have distributors who have resellers who then sell to end customers. And so we were a little bit removed from end customers and understanding, you know, how do you serve an end customer in a cloud-based world where, you know, retention and really keeping those customers happy and healthy and creating brand advocates is everything to the business. And so I joined in 2000, like I mentioned, mid 2014, really to help Craig, our CEO, with creating a culture of customer obsession. And because we were so far removed from the customer, there was not a lot of, you know, DNA within our organization on how to, you know, deliver great service to customers. And so we, you know, we've been on a pretty long journey to turn the company around. We have, over that time, you know, pretty much shed all of our on-premise business. Uh-huh. And acquired over 4,000 new paying subscription customers in just a few years. So lots of growth on the SaaS-based side. So certainly a journey to, I always say we were sort of changing the tires on the bus while it was in mid-motion.
Right. So, but you also kind of like mentioned when we first sort of spoke, and I got some sort of bit of a background, and just to make it sort of clear in terms of the situation that you were facing, you know, when we spoke, you told me about the state of your NPS scores. I mean, that's because I think if you could tell us a little bit about that, where you were, that gives almost a little bit of context in terms of what the sort of the level of improvements that you've made.
Absolutely. So when I joined, you know, Craig, the reason I joined was I loved that he understood the link between creating a customer-obsessed culture and actually, you know, delivering great value to customers. It has to start with your people. And when I came to LifeSize, again, because we were so far removed from end customers, our net promoter score was at a -4.
Right.
And you know, when I first came in, you know, there was a lot of bleeding. Craig said, you know, we had a product release that didn't go so great. But once I got in and really started asking questions to our customers, to the front line, looking at, you know, at that point we were surveying customers and asking them at the end of support transactions, you know, how we did, but nobody was really reading or looking at that data. And so what I ended up finding after digging in was not that we actually, the product was pretty solid. It was just that we were not talking to our customers.
Right.
And we didn't understand what they were telling us. And so, you know, I think a lot of times companies go through this sort of, you know, if you're not talking to customers and you're not bringing the voice of the customer into your business, you know, everyone kind of assumes they know what's going on, when really the main issues are not necessarily what we think's going on, but maybe something very different. And that's what I found when I walked into LifeSize. So we, you know, when I spoke with Craig and he had asked, you know, Amy, you know, help me to understand that. He's like, I've got customers, you know, sending me emails all day or calling my phone, resellers calling me upset. Within a couple of months, we had really cleaned a lot of that up. And you know, he's like, how did you make customers How did you make it stop? And I said, well, I just listened to them. And it was funny, just, you know, the simplest thing. So I looked at those post-transaction support ticket transaction surveys, and the data on those surveys, what customers were telling us, was just let me know that you got my ticket.
Right.
It wasn't even like give me a resolution or just let me know you've got the ball. This is something I think that any business, you know, can attest to. I think, you know, people by nature really want to do good. You know, they, especially in customer support, you don't work in customer support if you don't love serving customers. And so I think, you know, people want to help customers. They want to see what they do. And this is not just in customer support role, but in general, they want to make sure that what they're doing is valued and to be part of something bigger. And I think our teams just didn't feel like they were a part, especially on the support side, that they were really a part of something bigger and that the work that they did mattered. And so when I joined, you know, I really decided, you know, I needed to set the customer, the customer obsession strategy, not just for my team, but for us as a company, to help folks understand, you know, why it was important and really to give them more of a sense of purpose.
Right.
For the work that they were doing.
Okay.
And so the first thing I did was really to help us to set that, you know, that vision, starting with my team.
So, I mean, let me kind of go back a little bit, because I think what you kind of said was kind of quite interesting, because I think this might be a common thing as well, is that, correct me if I'm wrong, when you came in, you're at a -4 on your NPS scores, but the common view at the most senior levels of the company that there had to be a problem with the products, but you decided that actually that possibly wasn't the case. I mean, how did you kind of like, how did you get the senior team and Craig to actually, what's the best word, to realize it wasn't just about the products, it was about something else?
Education, and some more education.
Right.
And data is always good. So I basically spent a good month in the, you know, really interviewing customers, partners, employees, our executive staff, to understand. I needed to understand what my team, the leadership team, thought was going on in the business, because
right.
That was super important. Because I started digging into the data, you know, and realizing that the problems that at least I had heard from Craig and a couple other folks when I was actually in the interview process, you know, I needed to figure out what do they think is going on, and then how do I reshape that with, you know, and back it up with some data that I'm finding. So I did a lot of interviewing, and I also took, you know, a lot of the we had a bunch of systems and processes in place on the support side. So the good news was I had a lot of data that I could go in and really analyze. And I just kind of peeled back the onion and understood what was going on in customer support. really looking at the support interactions that were coming in, the support transactions. And, you know, those teams did not have a, I think people thought that we had a product problem because customers were screaming directly at anyone they could get in touch with.
Right.
And it wasn't that they were screaming because the product was broken. In most cases, they were just screaming, again, because we weren't talking to them.
Right.
So I needed to show that in a way that was, easy to understand and simple. And so one of the, I always say that, again, with these kind of, If you don't have a way to bring the voice of the customer into your business and you're relying on just, internal folks, it makes it really hard to really go figure out what's going on. And so in addition to getting a lot of information on the support side through, our support transactions, I also launched Net Promoter at the relationship level, so at a kind of an entire company level. And for us, that was really the very first, because again, I was getting a lot of different and a lot of varying opinions from people all across the business internally, and then from our resellers and customers externally. So, for me being on the customer side of the world, usually what our customers tell us is what's really going on in the business.
Okay.
And so I put Net Promoter in. We launched our first relationship survey, and I got a lot of feedback from that survey that allowed me to go have a different interaction with the leadership team to say, guys, this is what, I understand that we think we've got, some problems with the product, but quite honestly, the product is pretty solid. These are the areas that our customers are telling us, we need to go work on and fix.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really bringing that voice in and, at an aggregated level with customer names, using customer names. I think for one of the first times in the business at a, focusing in on helping to connect our teams with who the people are that we're serving.
Mm-hmm.
And that really made, I think that was one of the biggest, the very biggest impacts early on was to bring that voice of the customer program into the business as an operational rhythm for listening to our customers to go driving change in the business.
Okay, and so it seems to me that you go first. You have to kind of get your hands or get your arms around kind of current perceptions in the business, and then you do a whole bunch of kind of listening to try and change people's perception and focus them on where the real kind of problems are. But then what happens kind of next? So this is like a story of transformation, right? And that what I'm really interested in is almost like how people kind of did it, and how do you make those, how do you then, I guess, what's the word, take the data, take the understanding, how do you then kind of try and leverage that to actually kind of do better things and, and improve business results? I mean, how did you go about doing that?
Sure. So there were a couple of quick wins. One was when, for me, Net Promoter is, it's not a score. I mean, I think the fact that there is a score is fantastic because it helps us to benchmark against others and see how we're doing progressively over time. If you don't measure it, it doesn't exist. But for us, it was an operational rhythm in the business, and I needed to get us aligned as one team.
Mm-hmm.
We were very siloed, as you can imagine. There's a lot of companies, out there that are in the same boat. But lots of silos, kind of everyone had their own agendas. And really I needed folks to realize that, look, we are all on the same team. one team, and our team is life-size. And the folks that, that were serving our customers. And so, what I ended up doing was, when I rolled out Net Promoter, I asked for a team of, what I call customer obsession ambassadors.
Right.
And I asked for volunteers from every single functional area in the organization because they are all engaged in the customer experience.
Right.
And I wanted each of them to understand the critical role that they play in our customers' lives. And I needed them to do it by talking to our customers.
Right.
Because when you get so far removed from the people that you're serving, or you kind of or you forget, and it's not the it's not at the forefront of your business. If you're in finance, I don't think you realize that the work that you do, could impact positively or negatively a customer.
Sure.
And so, so we got those ambassadors together and they did, you know, outreach. We got them trained on how to do outreach with then customers, how to do root cause analysis, and really working together to go fix problems on behalf of customers.
Right.
And so we prioritized, and we went and drove change. And so I think that helped, you know, again, to get them more closely intertwined with one, talking to customers, two, understanding the role that they play, three, with cross-functional alignment to break down all of those silos.
Yeah.
And really to start banding those folks closer together and realizing, you know, this is a team effort and that's what it takes. So I would say from a, that was one of the very, most impactful things early on. And then really it was around, setting a strategy for the business across four customer obsessions.
Right.
And so that was kind of the next, you know, the next tactical, or not tactical, but I mean, we set the strategy and then we really set off on doing quarterly goals around, okay, what are we going to do, you know, as a company to improve the lives of our customers, and working against those quarterly goals and measuring quarter over quarter.
And so tell me, I mean, that sounds great because you're getting kind of people involved across the business. So it's not just kind of support, it's kind of operations, it's technical, it's engineering, it's finance, it's the whole shooting match. I mean, I guess my question is that did it all go smoothly? I mean, what worked, what didn't work? What would you have done differently? You know, that sort of, can you tell me a little bit about that sort of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say that we, you know, most, you know, there were a few functional areas that were a little bit harder to persuade than others. And so, you know, I think that certainly alignment at the leadership team level is key. That's like, you know, A number one, every single person on a leadership team has to believe in the same thing.
Right.
And so, you know, for me, it was definitely an educational journey as well, because, you know, coming from when you're a customer service executive, you know, for us, it's sort of like customer service and treating customers well. It's like, why wouldn't anyone do that?
Sure.
You know, like, why don't you think about this all day long? and you have to realize that, you know, none of us think the same. And so for me, I really had to do a lot of education to my team, to the leadership team, because first of all, not a lot of the team came from a SaaS-based world where, you know, again, retention is critical. And it is, you know, keeping customers, keeping them happy, you know, that makes or breaks your business in a cloud-based world because customers can, you know, pretty much switch and go anywhere they want. So so for me, there was a lot of education that I needed to do at the executive level to really help tie the financial implications of treating customers well back to the business.
Yeah.
Because it does require some, you know, some investment. We, especially in SaaS, you know, we invested in a customer success team. And that's, you know, a critical factor, but not something that, you know, if you don't live in that world, that you would necessarily know. So I would certainly, you know, I think the big thing for anyone that's, you know, trying to go on this journey is really to make sure that you're tying back the end result, the end financial impact that treating customers well and creating a very strong brand that your employees love, you know, where they love coming into work every day to serve customers, and your customers love doing business with you because you're just a wonderful company to work with and you have great people.
Mm-hmm.
And how does all that tie into financial results, creating promoters and advocates and word of mouth and second order revenues and expansion and all the great things that come along with it? And so, you know, I would say not everyone is, that's not top of mind for most people. And so educating, not just when I mentioned that I, you know, one of the big things I did was create this vision for customer obsession.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did a lot of education at the leadership level, and also at our, we created all hands or town hall meetings where we educated every single one of our employees on the importance of this to our business.
Right.
Because again, if it's not front and center and we're not talking about it all the time and folks aren't educated, you know, you kind of don't know what you don't know. And everyone talks in different terms. And so you've got to tie it back to financial outcomes for the business so that everyone understands, you know, why it's so important.
So you mentioned the so this is 2.5 years ago, and you kind of mentioned kind of, you know, performance and financial returns and so on and so forth. I mean, so what's happened since over the last kind of 2.5 years? Where have you gotten to?
Okay, so I will say this is the coolest, really the coolest thing I've ever done in my professional career, because I came from a company before Lifesize that was, I walked in the door and they were customer obsessed. So it was, you know, CEO driven, top down, and was just always in the DNA of the company. And so when I looked for my next adventure, I guess, I was curious to see if it was possible, you know, to change a company who had customers just freaking out and screaming at them and, you know, not happy at all, to a company where customers love us.
Yeah.
And so that is possible. And it's one of the coolest things that I think I have really ever done in my career. And so, you know, a couple of things that when I look back on the overall initiative, you know, that I think surprised me were that we had, you know, I didn't ever expect, I think the level of, it was hard to tell whether or not, you know, when you're changing an entire culture of people, whether or not people would really band together and you know, and be able to deliver that level of service to customers and really enjoy what they're doing. And so to me, seeing that transformation, just seeing the difference that we're making in our employees' lives and in our customers' lives has been, you know, just fantastic. And I was a little surprised. I didn't know if we could do it, because if, you know, doing that while you're transforming an entire company is, you know, certainly a challenge. So very, very invigorating.
So where are you at on now on your sort of NPS score and kind of the financial results and kind of retention and all that type of stuff? I mean, because that's kind of where the rubber hits the road, really. People can feel good about it and you can, you know, you can feel like you're making progress. But ultimately, when we're in business, it comes down to bottom line results, right? So where have you got to in the last 2.5 years?
So we've acquired to date over, I think I mentioned a little bit earlier, over 4,200 new customers onto the platform.
Okay.
Our net promoter moved from a -4 to we're now in the 75 and many months topping the 80 range. We won a Gold Stevie in 2015 for Customer Support Team of the Year because of that transformation. That time we had gone from -4 to 50. Mm-hmm. And in 2016, we moved from 50 to 75. And so I think that's just a testament, you know, same team, just different processes, different systems, different philosophy, which is fantastic. You know, financial results, we are growing 3 times faster than any company in our VC's portfolio to date. Our retention rates have improved over the last year by 10%.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, it's a, which, you know, if you're in a SaaS-based world, you take that 10% increase in retention just with a 2 million ARR base, you know, that's $17 million additional over 5 years.
Yeah,
and if you do that, you know, for your entire portfolio of ARR, that's a significant win. And so, you know, that's not that is all the outcome of everyone working together as one team. You can't do it without that.
I mean, that's fascinating. I mean, and congratulations on that in terms of taking an existing kind of team of people and almost just like changing their orientation and then producing some big results. But I guess by the signs of it, you're probably still on the journey and you've still got a lot more to do. So what now? I mean, what are the next big challenges for Lifecycle? What's the next big thing?
Sure. So, you know, there's onwards and upwards. The transformation's over, which is great. I mentioned we shed our legacy business. That is an insignificant part of the business. And we're, you know, a pure SaaS-based player. For me, I am, I use StrengthsFinder with my team, and one of my strengths is maximizer, which means I'm never okay with good. I'm only okay with great. And
right.
So this year, we are continuing our journey on ensuring that we deliver a great experience to customers. We're doing a lot of, you know, on the kind of company side, we're really honing in and focused on getting churn as close to zero as possible, and then maximizing our additional expansion into accounts. We've got a lot of stuff that's going on the advocacy side. You know, now that we've done the transformation, we're really working on, you know, how do we better enable our advocates and create raving fans, and just a lot of work around the overall customer experience. You know, so from beginning when customers engage with us in the buyer's journey, you know, all the way through the total life cycle, you know, and journey mapping that out, figuring out what are the, you know, we know what most of our critical touch points and key loyalty drivers are. So we do a lot of work around honing in on those and making sure that each of those touch points and experiences is as good as it can be. So we continue to refine that. And, you know, our biggest mission in 2017, at least for my customer success team, is really how do we deliver great value to our customers. Okay. And help them to realize the value and help them to continue to realize value from our solution and also just from our products and our people. Because I think, you know, that is something that that we're super focused on this year. So,
okay.
And, you know, continuing to grow and expand the business. So it's great.
Fantastic. I mean, so, you know, reflecting on your own experience in this type of area and so building a sort of a culture of customer obsession, as you say, and customer success. I mean, if you were to give some advice to other leaders or executives or entrepreneurs are running their own kind of businesses and they're facing similar challenges, I mean, where would you recommend that they start?
So I would say certainly, you know, the interview process for me was huge.
Right.
And I think you've got to get to the front line, because they are the people most engaged with the end customer.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, you got to manage from the top, and you got to manage from the bottom, and kind of everywhere in between. But, you know, certainly, I think really understanding, you know, what's going on at that front line is critical. And then also making sure that you're bringing the voice of the customer into the business, because then, you know, when you're in an organization where you're trying to do transformation and everything's siloed, it breaks the silos, because it's not me and you, it's our customer telling us this. And then it's us trying to solve a problem together. So, yeah.
Okay. That's perfect. I mean, that's great. I mean, and very, very practical sort of, you know, ideas there. I mean, but Amy, I've got a couple of, you know, questions that I want to ask you that are not about your story. But before I move on to those, is there anything else that you think that we've missed that you'd like to add, sort of like a reflection on that, you know, the whole process that you think would be valuable for our listeners and readers?
Sure. So, you know, when I look back and two and a half years ago, feels like it goes by so fast. But, you know, when I look back on the overall transformation, you know, I would say that, you know, change, leading through change and getting people comfortable with that takes a lot of communication.
Right.
And so, you know, I would, you know, certainly, you know, a tip for anyone out there that's going through or leading a transformation is, you know, just make sure that anything that you do that requires change, just talk to your teams, talk to your people. People need to understand the why things are happening and have the context around it to kind of draw conclusions on their own. And so I think the more you can communicate, the more context you can give people, regardless of if they're, you know, one of your tier one support engineers or if they're a VP. I think, you know, everyone understanding, you know, why you're making the decisions that you are and leading them through the change is super critical to kind of keep them all together. So so that would be my one, you know, kind of piece of advice when I look back at the, you know, at the overall transformation. It's kind of, you know, just really focus and center and hone in on communication across the organization.
Thank you. So a couple of questions just to wrap up, Amy, and these are ones that I've been asking sort of at the end of every podcast that I've been doing over the last sort of year or so. So last year I published a book called How to Wow, which came out in April last year. And since it's come out, I've been doing my own little bits of market research, because I've been asking people, what is, from their perspective, what is wow service or wow experience to them?
So that's a great question. You know, for me, wow service is delivering more value than what the customer anticipated.
Okay.
And that could be done in many, many ways. It doesn't necessarily have to be done through, you know, through support or through customer success or through the product. I think there's a, you know, I think it's sort of a cross-organizational type of thing. But yeah, I do. I think wowing a customer is really, you know, making sure that the value that they get is not what they expect or anticipate in a good way.
Perfect. That's brilliant and kind of different as well, which is great because I've been asking all these different people and getting all sorts of different answers, which is fantastic, but also reinforces the idea that wow service or wow experience is actually whatever you want to make it, as long as it kind of makes sense for your customers, I guess.
Absolutely.
So, Amy, that brings me to my final question that I always ask at the end of these interviews. And the question is this. Is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug?
So I don't have any shameless plugs. But I do want to offer, you know, if anyone is interested in talking about, you know, transformation or, you know, has any questions or tips and would like to get some tips and tricks, I'm always available. I think you'll publish my information online. But, you know, ultimately, my hope, and I love that you're doing this type of work, you know, is just spreading the good word of how to build great companies through treating customers right. And so thank you for helping to, you know, to spread the good cause.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, what I'll do is I'll make sure I get all this kind of edited up and linked up and things. But I guess what we'll do is I'll say, make sure that you do a bit of a search on Amy. Just go Amy at Lifesize, either on Twitter or LinkedIn, and you'll find her and you reach out to her and she's more than happy to help.
Absolutely.
So finally, Amy, I just want to say thank you. Well, first of all, congratulations on the work that you're doing and the results that you're achieving. I think that's fantastic. And also just want to say thank you for your time and for sharing your story and your experience with us today. That's been brilliant.
Yeah, thank you for finding me and for having me on the show.